Whoop, whoop. I don't know if this music is quite getting me to whoop, whoop territory, DeMarco. I'm trying to drag it along and give us a little bit of energy along the way. Curtis, come on, my man. We need to have to do find some of our regular stuff. California Love. Thank you, Jorge.
There we go.
We need to do that along the way.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm just gonna muscle through it. I want to get into the Rams. I want to get into where they are as far as getting ready for this season, Sean McVay's fourth season as the head coach of the team. But I also don't want to go too far past what we just talked about with Adam Rittenberg. And he was talking, you know, he mentioned something right towards the end there that I had never considered. And it's a great point. If we play football in the spring, you're asking these guys to play two football seasons in one calendar year. That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Man.
Yeah,
you're going to have these guys play from. I'm just making up things. Let's say you have them play from March to, you know, March, April, May, and then okay, June, July, August. You kind of slow down a little bit, and then you start again 3 months later. That's a non-starter. You can't do that.
Well, actually, Travis, I saw it happen before with NFL Europe, and when I was coaching over there, I would tell guys your reward for working hard over here is more hard work when you get to training camp, and some guys made it through, some guys did not. So. It's hard on the body, but it can be done. It's not something I would want to ask college athletes to do, but it is possible. But you were a professional going from NFL Europe right into an NFL training camp and trying to make a football team. In some respects, it actually helped guys. You were more warmed up. You had more football than some of these guys you're competing against, and you get a leg up in training camp. But it's going to be tough for, like, the average 20-year-old to go from a college football season right into a training camp. That's pretty taxing, pretty brutal.
Absolutely. That's asking a lot. And the one thing, you know, I remember talking with Key about this, and he said, no way, no how. I'm interested to get your perspective as well. Let's say you just can't play football in the fall. Okay, we can't do it. It's just not safe. Or let's say even say that maybe a season starts and you get a week or two in and there's just infections everywhere. You have to shut it down. And then you decide to play spring football. Would the NFL be completely just a non-starter about moving their timeline? I'm not even talking about the start of the season. I'm just saying that if the draft is typically in April, let's do the draft in June. Let's just push it back so these guys can play. I can get a few more eyeballs. Is that just a non-starter out of the gate?
I would say so. I mean, these scouting departments, and I'm just talking about Les Snead and the group that I know very well. I mean, they're scouting these guys from the jump. I mean, they know these guys coming out of high school. So some guys, you don't need more tape on or more evaluation on. You know who your guys are. And if there's some guys you have to X off the list because they were on the bubble to begin with, there's more than enough guys you can go with that you do have enough information on. So I don't think the NFL will wait on college football or wait on the college football athlete. I don't think they'll change their timeline at all. If there's more than enough guys that you can fill out a draft roster with to bring to your football team.
All right, so speaking of the timeline, this is typically where you and I start to see each other for the first time since the end of last football season when we're out at training camp, when we're inside the Coliseum, looking forward to seeing the inside of SoFi Stadium if and when that finally happens and we're allowed to go in and do that. But what is it going to be like for Sean McVay? Because Sean McVay's approach to the preseason was always kind of unique anyway, where he played very, very few of his regular players. He would play backups, and he would look for some depth in some other positions along the way. And the guys that we all want to see, you know, Jared Goff and Andrew Whitworth and Andrew Donald and these guys, they're not playing. Nobody's going to be playing this fall. Nobody's going to be playing in training camp getting ready for it. What are your expectations for the beginning of the season, those first couple of weeks? If everybody just says, okay, here we are, first weekend in September, let's play football, and nobody's tackled anybody going back for, you know, 6 or 9 months.
But you mentioned the operative word, tackling. I think you're going to have to do some of that in training camp. You're going to have to dial back the clock to the early 90s, late 80s, and actually have some contact to the ground in training camp just to get the guys ready, because you can't go out there and practice for, you know, 14 weeks or 14 days, 2 weeks, and then expect to go live in fall and have guys know how to properly tackle people without getting hurt. So some of that's going to have to be done on your own guys. And it can be done. You can get through a practice with live contact and keep everybody healthy. The one thing that really used to bother me a little bit is, we got so afraid of contact in training camp because you thought guys were going to get hurt. Wait, that's what we used to do in days past. If you're smart, if you know how to teach and know how to teach tackling and how guys can be professionals when they practice, you can tackle to the ground and keep guys healthy. So you're going to have to do that in camp. It's going to be a little more physical in camp. There's going to be a little more, you know, there's going to be some fights in camp, more than you've seen in the last couple of years. But I think that's what's going to happen to get you ready for fall, to get you ready for the regular season without without preseason football. But Sean McVay is a guy, if you said he had to, you know, walk on the roof and coach upside down, he'd say, okay, well, that's how we're going to have to work it. So this is the system you're in. This is what you're going to have to do. This is the new normal. There are no excuses for not getting better, even through something like this. But it's going to be a test for him, a young coach, to bring that sort of mentality, that old school tackle guys, have guys going after your best running backs or your best receivers in training camp just to get something done for the fall to get ready for the regular season.
You know, you talk about that new mentality as far as just the approach, because it's obviously very different than it's ever been, but it's new for everybody. It's not like Pete Carroll has had to do this before and Sean McVay had it. This is brand new for everybody. So everybody is at the same disadvantage, I guess. But what's new for Sean McVay, it maybe not new, but different. Let me rephrase. When Sean McVay took over for Jeff Fisher going back a few years ago, when he came in, it was kind of, okay, the team's not very good. Let's see what this is. And it turns out the team was really good. The team wins the division. Sean McVay kind of takes the league by storm, like, wow, look at this. Then you go to that second year, they go to the Super Bowl. We all know what that looked like. And it felt like Sean McVay's offense was kind of a cheat code, right? That they were just kind of tearing through everybody. And then last year, not so much. It was an average year by Sean McVay standards. They just missed the playoffs. A team that was 9-7, just kind of okay, kind of middling for most of the season. Had some seasons out. This year, this is the first time that Sean McVay is coming in as a known commodity, coming off of a non-playoff season. What do you think? How do you think he's going to respond to that? How do you think he responds to this? Oh, the shine is off of it a little bit. They kind of figured him out. Took him a couple of seasons, but okay, now it's his turn to move back. How does he respond?
Well, he's just like any other star player I know. He reads that stuff and he's motivated by it. When you think you figured him out, it's going to motivate him. But that's not the driving force, the sole driving force to what drives him to be a good coach. He just wants to win. He wants to beat the opponent. He wants to beat everybody on the schedule. But you know, when you hear stuff about, well, maybe the league has caught up to Sean McVay, I mean, you can tell that sort of gets to him, and that does get him up in the morning. But as far as where he is in his coaching and where he is with Jared Goff and raising another good quarterback or trying to get him to the next level, that's all it's about. It's all just about ball. And he feels, and so do the rest of the team, if they play their best game, they're as good as anybody in the league, maybe even better. So they have talent. At receiver, they have talent at running back. It's kind of an unknown group, but there's a lot of explosion there. In my opinion, if you can ever figure out that front five, that combination, that Rubik's Cube up front, and get that going in the right direction and keep some continuity there, I think the offense still works. Now, when you say cheat code, the only one that threw a cheat code back at Sean McVay and this offense was Bill Belichick, and that 6-1. And it seemed to be... It seemed to take a while for the Rams to figure that thing out, but I think that might have been more personnel-driven than scheme-driven. So I think some of that was a little bit overblown. And like you said last season, if you hit that field goal in Seattle, you might be in the playoffs, and it's a whole different year. So it's not the end of the road, or it's not that the Rams have fallen off, or, you know, it's a non-playoff season, yes, but there's still a lot of optimism on this football team that they can get into the playoffs and get beyond and get back into the Super Bowl.
You know, it's the ultimate cliche, but it's also true. The idea of, you know, you are what your record says you are. And the Rams were 9-7 and they missed the playoffs. But what you just said, this is something that I said all season long last year and then all offseason getting ready for this season. You mentioned the field goal that Greg Zuerlein missed in Seattle that missed by about a football. You know, it just missed. This is one of the best kickers in the league and he missed. You can go back to later in the season when that busted coverage against San Francisco cost them that game, because they were toe-to-toe with San Francisco. We know how good San Francisco was. San Francisco nearly won the Super Bowl, right? So they were toe-to-toe with those guys. They had a busted coverage late in the game, cost them that opportunity. They missed the playoffs. So are they a team that was 9-7 and missed the playoffs, or were they two bad plays away from being right where they were the year before, which is one of the best teams in the NFC? I mean, you can kind of look at it both ways. Fact of the matter is they did miss it. Fact of the matter is they did blow that coverage, but this is still a pretty damn good football team, and the vast majority of the pieces are coming back.
Absolutely. I think you're a couple of plays away from being right where you wanted to be last season. So, look, there was a little bit of a malaise there. There were too many mistakes in key situations. Now, that can happen, and I think that's been coached out. Like I said, some of that stuff was personnel-driven. There were some new guys at new spots that gave up some plays. There was a lot of confusion in the back end, especially, like you said, versus San Fran. If you don't have that fumble in your own end against San Francisco here in the Coliseum, I think you have a chance to win that football game. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they were in the Super Bowl. So, you know, each and every team they line up against, the Rams are a snootful. You didn't make the playoffs. You are in the also-ran category. But if you go back and look at each and every one of those games, with the exception of a few, they were right there to the end. They had a chance to win those games. So some years the ball bounces your ways, some years the ball bounces away from you. I think that might have been one of those years. But what didn't happen, and this is what I like the most, is no one is hanging their head. No one is, has one foot out the door. If anything, that last season motivated them to be better this year. So let's hope everyone stays healthy so they can get that done.
Yeah, that can kind of cut both ways, right? That they're sometimes like, oh, man, the world hates us. Nothing's going our way. Oh, woe is me. And you kind of, this sucks. And you just don't feel good about it. And then there's the, look, everything that could go wrong did. And we missed the playoffs by one game.
Right.
There's a different way to look at the exact same thing. And if we know anything about Sean McVay, it's that he's an incredibly positive guy. He's a power of positive thinking. And I guarantee you, he's looking at that like, we had some bad luck, but we're not a bad football team. I'm excited. Yeah. I think they're going to be much better than people think they are. You look at some of these predictions, some people think they're going to win 5 or 6 games, and that just looks crazy to me.
It does. I mean, look, I think there are a lot of people out there that are – they want the Rams to go backwards, but the truth of the matter is you still have Aaron Donald. Mm-hmm. No matter what you feel about Jared Goff, this is a guy that was in the Super Bowl 2 seasons ago. So I still think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now and has a chance to get better. There's still a high ceiling there, and look where he is now. So now you're going to have to replace Todd Gurley at running back. We all know that. But I do think you have a trio that can get that done. But the one thing that I do like is Aaron Donald is not the most vocal guy, at least to the media, but when you see him work out, when you see him come back, and he looked better than he did last season, which is hard to do. I mean, physically, yeah. He looks bigger, stronger, and faster than he did last season. That's going to motivate everybody else in that locker room. He is still hungry for a championship. He's the right guy. He's almost like the LeBron James in that locker room. So as long as he is still hungry for a championship, and you have Sean McVay who's still hungry for a championship, you're going to be in the fight more often than not.
I look at that video of him doing the crunches with the medicine ball and his feet kicking it back. That just makes me want to curl up into a ball and die. I didn't know human beings could do stuff like that. He's on a totally different level. All right, Jorge Castillo, who covers the Dodgers for the LA Times, he's going to join us next. We'll ask him what he thinks about where Clayton Kershaw is. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. But prior to that, we're going to check in with Karen Kay and traffic. Karen.
Busy, busy Monday morning, Travis. West LA, it's now a signal. The 405 southbound right before the 10 overturned car, and it's blocking the carpool lane. Fire crews on scene. Big old mess. Traffic is stop and go from Olympic Boulevard and Pico Boulevard. This report sponsored by Staples Stores. Staples helps your business with everything from office essentials to health essentials at amazing prices. This week, get 40% back in rewards when you spend $75 on ink or $75 on toner. Ends 8/15. Exclusions apply. See store or staples.com/40 in rewards. Staples, Karen K, 710 ESPN.
All right, Dodgers get another win yesterday against the Giants. They are off to a very nice 11-5 start. Joining us right now is Jorge Castillo, who covers the Dodgers for the LA Times. Jorge, good morning. How are you feeling?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Let's start with this. Where are you through the first 15 games or so of the season as far as your optimism, maybe it's pessimism, about getting to the end of the line and finishing the season? You like the chances?
Yeah, I like the chance a lot more than I did a month ago. Even a couple of weeks ago when all those cases started going with the Marlins. And now, the St. Louis Cardinals are still going through some stuff, but I feel like Major League Baseball is they really want to get to the postseason. There's a lot of money on the line there in October, so I feel a lot more confident now.
Why does everyone hate the Astros? I guess that's the easiest answer, but it seems like everyone's having trouble with the Astros these days. What's going on there?
Why wouldn't everybody hate the Astros, I guess? They cheated. The Dodgers have good reason not to like the Astros. They cheated. The A's have a little history with them too, because Mark Fiers, was on the A's, and he's the one that came out and sort of, I guess, snitched or, came out and whistle blew against the Astros. And then yesterday you had the situation where the coach is saying some stuff. I heard he was talking to that player, Ramon Laureano, all day long, chirping from the bench. Laureano gets hit by a pitch a second time. He has a history of getting hit by pitches by the Astros, the team that traded him to Oakland, and things got out of hand. You can't have a coach, the hitting coach, Alex Cintron, you can't have a guy challenging a player like that, then hiding behind a bunch of players and coaches, in a pandemic. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was super excited to get out there and mess with Laureano. Yeah, he was not feeling it the same way Laureano was. That's for sure. Absolutely. Jorge, let's go back to the Dodgers for a second. Through the first handful, we're about, a quarter of the way through the season at this point. What's been the biggest surprise for you? Is it the way that the bullpen's pitch, or is it something else?
Yes, I think the bullpen being this good is a pretty big surprise. Not a huge surprise. The bullpen was always going to be pretty good. The question was, can the bullpen be sort of a World Series caliber bullpen, a bullpen you can trust in October? It's 16 games, small sample size, but it's just such a small season, and 16 games ends up being, a quarter of the way through the season. So that's a pretty big surprise. And then probably on the negative end, the starting rotations is not pitching deep into games. They don't have the guys right now. Kershaw, struggled on Saturday. Buehler's not himself quite yet. You don't have David Price. You have Alex Wood on the injured list. So the rotation isn't where they want it to be. And they're still 11-5 because that offense isn't quite clicking quite yet. But they're still so good offensively. Mookie Betts is coming through. AJ Pollock, they have a lot of guys on the in that lineup that can produce.
Oh, Betts is worth every penny. We were talking, Trav and I were talking about this earlier. If you're Dave Roberts, how do you handle this Clayton Kershaw situation? He is the guy. He's a legend, but clearly he doesn't have the same stuff. How would you handle him going forward?
You just throw him out there every fifth day. Like you said, Clayton Kershaw is not the same guy he was, four or five years ago. But, last year, all the numbers say he still was a top 10 pitcher maybe in baseball, definitely in the National League. So he's still a guy who can get guys out. He's obviously not the top of the line. He's not the best pitcher in baseball anymore, but he's still one of the top pitchers in baseball. And I think, Walker Buehler's going to be if this team's going to win the World Series, Walker Buehler needs to be that ace-level pitcher. But Clayton Kershaw's up there. Whether he's in the team's number two, that's where they need him to be, the team's number two. Because after Kershaw and Buehler, there's some question marks. Is Julio Urias the number three? Is it Ross Stripling? Can Alex Wood get healthy? Is it Dustin May? Because they need Kershaw and Buehler up there.
Jorge Castillo covers the Dodgers for the LA Times. And, going back to the series prior to this one that ended with Chris Taylor throwing a guy out at home plate to end the game of a double play. Chris Taylor is a shortstop. He's been playing shortstop. Corey Seager goes down. We know Cody Bellinger plays all over the field. Max Muncy plays multiple positions. Mookie Betts can play pretty much anywhere in the outfield. He's even an infielder in a pitch. Is this all by design for the Dodgers that they are always looking for guys that can do more than one thing, especially guys that can play multiple positions?
Yeah, for sure. Versatility is huge for them. You forgot to mention Kike Hernandez.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There's a bunch of positions, and they got another kid coming up here, Zach McKinstry. He plays everywhere pretty much but catcher and pitcher. So that's very important to them. They love flexibility. You got Matt Beatty. You got Edwin Rios. They play multiple positions. They love having the opportunity to just move guys around, give guys days off, just giving Dave Roberts maximum flexibility with the lineup. And this team, Mookie Betts came here to lead off. He's not even leading off at the time. You know, they have guys everywhere. There's, you know, Jock Peterson can lead off. Then you got Mookie. And then, you know, batting eighth, you have sometimes, you know, a guy like Chris Taylor that you mentioned. You know, so this lineup's so deep, and being able to move guys around makes them, allows them to keep that depth every day.
You know, real quick for you, I just wanted to kind of follow up on that. Yeah. It's with Corey Seager being out again, he's got the back, and we know that he had Tommy John a couple of years ago. Is this just kind of, and let me preface this by saying, I'm the biggest Corey Seager fan in the world. He's my guy when I watch the Dodgers. He's the guy I'm pulling for probably more than the rest. But is this just kind of going to be his lot that he's always got these little nagging injuries?
Well, it seems that way. You know, the last few years, it's been that way. You know, Tommy John surgery, then he had the hip surgery. Those are major surgeries. You know, last year he had a, he was super hot, white hot, and then he got hurt. I think it was a groin injury. You know, this year, I mean, the first 10, 15 games of the season, he was proving his talent, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball. He was hitting the ball harder than anyone in baseball. He's probably the best hitter in baseball the first 10 games of the season. So hopefully this back injury is just something minor, and he can get back out there here in the next couple of days, maybe even today. But we'll see. But, yeah, those injuries, those nagging injuries are frustrating for him and the Dodgers. And, you know, hopefully they can kind of get past it, and this back injury is just a minor blip.
I wonder what playoff baseball is going to feel like without fans. I guess they've adjusted to a new normal, but it's going to be weird without fans going into the postseason. What do you think?
Yeah, it is. It is. You know that Astros series, for example, that two-game series. You know, if there were fans there, it would have felt so different. You know, I was there in Houston, and it just felt dead. You know, there was some kind of intensity between the two teams there, obviously because they don't like each other. But you know, if there were fans there, it would have been 100% different. And the fact there weren't fans there just felt, you know, odd and kind of dead. So I do think the playoffs are going to be weird. You know, what happens if you win a World Series? What happens if you win the first round, second round of the playoffs? Are you going to be able to celebrate in the locker room? You got champagne? Can you do the dog, you know, the dog piles? Probably not, right? Pandemic going on. It's going to be all strange. It's going to be so weird.
So, Jorge, how far away are we from the San Diego Padres being a problem? We know the Dodgers just opened another series with them. They've got some really good players like Tatis Jr. and Tommy Pham and some other guys as well. Are the Padres going to be the team that the Dodgers deal with moving forward?
I mean, I think they're a problem this year. They can be. You mentioned the talent. They have some talent. Fernando Tatis is the best. You can argue the best player in baseball right now. You know, this year so far. And then they have a lot of arm talent, a lot of guys at the bullpen that throw hard. This is such a short season, that 60-game season. Maybe a team like the Padres, a young team that maybe over the course of a long season couldn't keep it together. Maybe in this short season they can keep it together, and you know, they get into the playoffs and they get hot, and you know, they shock a couple teams, and before you know it, they're in the, you know, the NLCS or something like that. So I think they're a problem this year. Obviously, Colorado's off to a hot start. We'll see if that's for real or not. But I think the Padres, you know, just seeing them in person last week for, you know, 3 days, and they have a lot of talent. The lineup is deep, and they have a lot of talent in that pitching staff, the rotation and the bullpen.
How long has it been since they were since they were hot, since the Padres were good?
99, maybe?
I mean, I think they won a division about a decade ago. Right. It's been a while. I mean, the Padres haven't been good most of their existence. So, yeah, this is an exciting time for them. Fernando Tatis has been – he is exciting to watch. You know, he's one of the few players in baseball, in my opinion, that's, like, brings, like, excitement, like a level of excitement that's just – you know, he's like a Mookie Betts type in that regard. You know, just bringing this level of excitement to you know, to the game when you watch him. He has a lot of swagger. He backs it up with, you know, just hitting. I mean, I think he has 10 home runs already this year. He's fun to watch. Great at shortstop. I mean, that Manny Machado, obviously, Tommy Pham, Trent Grisham. They have a lot of talent on that team. Chris Paddock on the mound. So they're a fun team to watch. And this next three games, you know, like that series last week in San Diego, these three games are going to be fun to watch.
Jorge Castillo covers the Dodgers for the LA Times. Jorge, always good to have you on the program. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon. All right, Tiger Woods had a good day yesterday, but are the major championships a thing of the past? We will get into that next, DeMarco, on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, DeMarco, congratulations to Colin Morikawa, who is brand new on the PGA Tour scene, more or less. He picks up his first PGA championship, his first major championship yesterday. He finishes 13 under par, beats Dustin Johnson and a handful of other guys by a couple of shots. We saw Bryson DeChambeau, who apparently is on some sort of Aaron Donald weightlifting program to try to add distance to his game. But, you know, look, let's be honest. I know you're a golf person. I am a golf person. When we turn on a golf tournament, especially a major championship, it's about Tiger, right? It's about Tiger and what he's able to do. He was good yesterday. He shot a 3-under par, 67, finished 1-under par for the tournament in 37th place. And we talked about it a little bit earlier. And I don't even want to say this out loud because I don't want it to be true. He's just old, man. He just doesn't move like he used to move. He doesn't move like all of these other guys that are out there. He's got a, you know, first of all, he's older by 20 years than a lot of these guys. And he's had his back put together God knows how many times. It's just, he's just not Tiger Woods anymore.
You know, I asked my brother the same thing. I said, is it Tiger's back or is it his knee? And he said, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, he's just got a lot of swings. He's played a lot of golf, and this is just where he's at. But, yeah, man, I mean, I would say I'm a Tiger fan first, golf fan second. So whenever I walk in or turn on the TV and there's the tournament, the first thing I look for is, where's Tiger? Is Tiger on? Is he playing? Is he done for the day? I want to know what he's done because I'm such a fan. And, you know, I still get enjoyment out of watching Tiger Woods play, no doubt. It's still a lot of fun. It's almost nostalgic. But there is a little bit of sadness that creeps in when you see all these younger guys that are out driving him or out playing him and they're in contention. He's not. But still, no matter what, the first thing I do, and I'm sure you're with me, is where's Tiger in this tournament? Is he playing in this tournament and where is he? And if he's not on TV, when do I get a chance to see him tee off or putt or do what have you? So, but it is fun to watch the young guys. I'm trying to get into it. I'm trying to enjoy it. I think this kid who just won it, it might be a guy I follow. He's got one of those megawatt smiles. It seems like he's he's enjoying what he's doing. So, and he's got game to boot. So, to win your first major at 23 is awesome. That's something I will follow next. That is very Tiger-esque.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But it's funny you say, you know, there are guys that can hit it farther than Tiger now. There are guys that hit the ball more consistently than Tiger now. It's just the walk. Like when you watch Colin Morikawa yesterday or Dustin Johnson or Koepka or any of these guys that are in the mix over and over again, it's just the walk from the tee to the green. They're loose. They're not worrying about their body. And Tiger walks like somebody who's had their back put back together a bunch of times. I've had a back surgery.
He walks like you and I.
Yeah, there's that moment where you get up in the morning, you put your feet on the ground, you're like, all right, what sort of day is this going to be? And then you stand up and your knees go pop, 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 pop. And then you walk to the bathroom. Oh, yeah. And then your knees pop, 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 pop. And then you walk downstairs to get your coffee, pop, 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 pop. And you can almost hear Tiger's knees and back popping as he's walking through this stuff. And it's too bad because last year he had kind of had it rolling. He won the Tour Championship. He won the Masters. And you're like, you know what? Maybe we're going to get a late look at Tiger where he's able to kind of put some things together every once in a while. And it just felt like that was the last time we're going to get it. He just physically isn't capable of doing what you need to do right now, which is hit the ball 330 yards, which is be able to do it 4 days in a row. He's not 25 anymore like the rest of these guys. He's an old man with a history of injuries, and he looks like it.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you have a game plan mentally just to, like, pull it out of the ground, pull your ball out of the hole, you know you're a little bit older. But, you know, I mean, look, maybe that tournament, it wasn't for Tiger, but at some point, you know, I'm through writing him off because every – He shows up and he wins a tournament. Like you said, last year was great for him. So this wasn't great. It doesn't mean the next time we see him tee off that he's not going to be around the top or near the top. Maybe playing in San Francisco is tough for a guy with that many ailments. Playing somewhere that's warmer might be a little bit better for a guy like Tiger. So I'm not ready to write him off, but it is sad when you see a tournament go by when so many guys are playing better than he is at that moment. When you consider yourself a Tiger fan, you always want to see him near the top. And when he's not there, it's going to be a bad day for you.
You know, I think it's one of these things too, DeMarco, that, and I'll compare it to LeBron. Tiger and LeBron did something that's virtually impossible to do. And that's not only meet the hype, but actually exceed it. That Tiger Woods was one of these guys that think about this. We knew who Tiger was before he was even a professional. I dare you to name another amateur golfer right now. I can't do it, and I'm a golf fan.
I wouldn't.
You know what I mean?
And
so we knew who Tiger Woods was before he'd even showed up. So that was amazing because he had a crazy father who was pushing him out in front of the world, and because he was a prodigy and was able to do things at a really young age, we were aware. And it's like, oh, can he be the next, you know, Jack Nicklaus or whatever it is? Well, he is. It turned out that's true. LeBron James shows up in high school on ESPN on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and it's, is he the next Michael Jordan? Well, yeah. I mean, it actually worked.
True.
They both exceeded the hype. They both did even better than your wildest expectations. And this idea of looking for the next LeBron James, looking for the next Tiger Woods, you don't get one. They don't come around. If you get one every 50 years, you're pretty lucky. So this idea of, oh, well, maybe this guy could be the next Tiger, or maybe this guy could be the next LeBron. It's like, no. Just enjoy these guys while they're here, because it doesn't happen but maybe once or twice in your entire life, and we got two of them right now.
True. I mean, Haley's comment, you're still looking for that. I mean, but there's a lot of other things in this guy to look at. That's why I like this, you know, Colin Morikawa. I mean, 23 years old, and besides him winning, and he was phenomenal, that shot on 16, I still think about it. Just the announcers going off. Even the golfers themselves were talking about that shot. But just, it was a 7-way tie. I mean, that was great golf, period, yesterday. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Going into the closing stages, I mean, it was tight going down the stretch. That was the most fun I've had watching golf in a long time. You know, who's going to step in front and win this darn thing?
Did you see who the first person to ask him a question, Morikawa, was in the post-game or the post-tournament press conference? Did you see who asked him the first question?
How cool is that?
It was great. It was Steph Curry, for people that didn't get a
Steph
chance
Curry.
To see
it. How cool is that, man? Wow. That's how you know you arrived.
Absolutely. He shows up, and he's like a credentialed member of the media, so he can cover this thing. You know, obviously the Warriors are not inside the bubble. We all know that Steph is golf crazy, but think about that. You know, Morikawa went to Cal. Morikawa is a Bay Area college. He grew up in L.A., and he's a Laker fan. Like, he made that known, even to Steph, that he's a Laker fan. But you imagine that, you know, he's 23 years old, and all of a sudden Steph Curry is asking you things? That's surreal, man.
Man, I love his quote, though. He said, when I woke up on Sunday, I was like, this was meant to be. This is where I feel very comfortable. This is where I want to be. So he's very comfortable where he is. So he's been preparing for this in his short life, 23 years. So that sort of stuff is only going to get better. I mean, it's great. There's Steph Curry, one of the biggest superstars in sport, period, asking you questions. He's comfortable. He's not shocked by it. You know, he's not shocked by winning. So that tells me this guy's going to be in contention and around for a long time. So maybe that next Tiger Woods we just saw.
You know, DeMarco, you were on a Super Bowl champion team. You were on a team at University of Washington that won the national championship of college football. Did you have moments where you just, today's our day, man. This is going to happen. I'm not worried about this. I know that this is going to happen. I just need to do my job, play well. We're going to win. Did you have those feelings?
Oh, yeah, several times. And the funny thing, Trav, it didn't come in wins. Some of them were losses where you were playing well or you just felt like, you know, this is where I'm meant to be. So no matter what happens, what I see in front of me or whatever God throws at me, I am prepared for it. That's when you see guys that are smiling and you don't know why they're smiling. They're feeling good. Their body is responding. Their mind and body are on the same page. Their mind, body, and spirit are on the same page. And they're out there reacting. They could be out there whistling a tune, thinking about something else and making every play in the world, but they're thinking about everything but what they're doing. It's just, this is where I'm meant to be. This is where I feel good. The fact that I'm about to be a champion does not scare me. A lot of guys have a shot at championships and they get scared out of it. They talk themselves right out of it. I think this guy has been preparing for this his whole life and he is ready for this moment. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's something about that too. And not just him specifically, but he certainly falls into this category. There are just some guys that are excited about the opportunity and embrace it. And hey, let's see what's going to happen. Let's go out there. I'm really good at this. Let's go do it. Yeah. And then there are some other guys that are, man, this is, this is a big deal. If I win this, man, I don't know. This is going to, you know, I got to do this. And if I win this, if I don't, if I miss it, they're going to call me a choker. It's just, and you can see him a mile away. And Dustin Johnson, who was the runner up yesterday, is one of the most talented guys you're ever going to see swing a golf club. He's won one of these things. He should have five or six right in his back pocket. And he's got one. And he doesn't seem like he's a panicker because he's kind of a chill guy. But his play certainly doesn't lead you to believe that everything's under control at times. And he didn't play too badly yesterday, but you're just all sorts of guys. You look at, Damian Lillard was just calling out Paul George about this, about not being built for that moment. There are some guys that love it. There's some guys that don't. And I don't think you can control it. I think you're just one or the other.
Some guys want that moment. Some guys really don't, no matter what they say. And you can tell when it happens to them. But, you know, the next test for me, for him, at least watching him play, this is Morikawa, is what happens if you have a run, let's say, like Koepka, when it's all geared up and it's supposed to be your turn for a run and you hit a rut and it's not going so well. How do you maintain your focus when your game isn't responding like you wanted to? So when it's all there and you're ready for the moment and you nail it and it's great, but what happens when you start to struggle just a little bit and you can't figure out why? Do you start to change everything? Because Tiger went through that. Remember how many times Tiger changed his swing?
Sure.
About 1,000 times? I mean, sure. What do you do when your game isn't there, when your body's not responding? Do you trust it? Do you believe that it's going to come around? Or do you try to go to 8 different swing doctors trying to fix it and ruin your game completely?
Yeah, well, we've seen some guys do that as well. All right,
no doubt.
Marco, we got take it or shake it. You got two choices. You like it, you don't like it. Take it or shake it. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. But before that, another look at the road with Karen Kay. Karen, let's start with this one. We talked about it a little bit earlier that there is a conspiracy theory floating out there that the other NBA teams are trying to set it up so Portland gets to play the Lakers in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Here it comes. The Lakers have a preference as to who they play in the first round of the playoffs. Take it or shake it.
Oh, I'll shake that. I don't think they
care. Oh, shake it.
Yeah, shake that. I don't think they really care who they play. I don't think LeBron cares who's on the docket. I don't think he looks like that. I mean, you got the best player on the planet. Even he says it. He's the best basketball player ever. Why would God fear anybody? You know, so, yeah, I don't think they worry about anybody they're facing, but I do think it's plausible the other way around. I think teams are trying to knock the Lakers out, knock LeBron out of the postseason, no doubt.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron's scared of anybody, but I think that the other guys on the team, if you're asking me, do I want to go deal with the Phoenix Suns or the Portland Trailblazers, that's not a hard question for me. I would much rather have to deal with Devin Booker, who's a really nice player. Don't get me wrong. He's playing great inside the bubble as well, but Damian Lillard scares the you-know-what out of me. I've seen Damian Lillard hit too many 40-foot shots at the end of quarters and the end of games to beat people. Like, I don't need that guy as a part of my life. I do not need him.
Be careful, Travis. You might get $5,000 for talking about Booker.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of, I would really like to one day be in a position, DeMarco, where somebody fines me $50,000 and I just laugh. I think that would be kind of funny because that's what Draymond
would that be a
did.
Great life? $50,000 is nothing. That would be awesome.
Make it 100. How about that? Because I'm going to do it again.
I might send you 100.
Yeah, just put it on retainer. Put it in my account. Right. So you can draw it later. All right, let's move on to another one. Tiger Woods finished in a tie for 37th place in the PGA Championship. Tiger Woods will never win another major. Take it or shake it.
I'm going to shake that, man. I still think.
Oh, shake it.
You think he gets another one?
I think he does.
I don't know if we're having a problem with me hearing you, DeMarco, or if nobody can hear you. I want you to be right. I want him to get another one because I think that it's great for golf, obviously, but I think it's just great for sports. That Tiger Woods is one of maybe the only golfer of my lifetime. If you're older than I am and probably a lot older than I am, maybe you could make the case for Arnold Palmer a million years ago that Arnold Palmer brought sports fans to golf, but Tiger's the only one that's done that in my lifetime. I would love to see him win another one. I just don't think his body can hold up to 4 days of that kind of competition. competition with this many good players in the world right now.
I'm back, Travis. At some point, he's going to find the right mix. He is, and he'll be right there in contention. And if you get Tiger on the right day on any given Sunday, beat just about anybody. So I still think it's out there for Tiger. So I think one more before it's all said and done.
All right, let's move on to another NBA topic right here. And this has been a recurring theme on our show over the last maybe 6 or 9 months since he's come back into the NBA. Zion Williamson is overweight. Take it or shake it.
I got to take it. Come on, man.
Yeah.
We're fighting the same battle. Yeah. Yeah. I have to buy jeans and underwear at the same spot. You know, we can't pass by a Dairy Queen and not go, you know what I mean?
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude that can hop. He's explosive. He's a big chunky guy that can get up and absolutely throw. So enjoy it while it lasts, unless he changes body.
Yeah, that's the thing. Look, I'm not going to knock a blizzard out of your hand either, DeMarco. They're pretty damn good, but the fact Snickers. Of the matter is you and I are not 20 years old anymore. You know what I mean? We're
right.
not 20, and we're not making our living predicated on what you just described, which is being an explosive, transcendent athlete. And right now, he is that because he's 20. But I just wonder at 25 if he's still carrying that weight. And because he's carrying the weight, if he does get hurt, if it's an ankle or a knee or one of these things where he can't put in the cardio the way that you would expect him to, because, look, he came back into that bubble even just after a couple of days of being away to deal with a family issue, and it looked like he put on weight. I just think he's one of those guys that he puts on weight really, really easily, and I worry about his future because he's an incredible talent, but the body just doesn't look right.
Did you see that tweet the other day? They had a picture of all these athletes from their rookie year until now when they matured. LeBron was on there. Tiger was on there. And they had Zion on there. And the mature guy they used, and I had to take a double take, was Booger McFarlane. That's how he's going to look. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's right. That's how he's going to look. Yeah, so he's a guy that's really care of health and – you know, eat right and take care of his body later on, or like you said, without that explosiveness, how good can he really be?
Yeah, that's I don't know if there's a lot of NBA players looking like Booger McFarland. NFL players, sure, but I don't know. I don't know if that's a great look if you're in the NBA. All right, let's move to boxing. The Mike Tyson Roy Jones fight has been pushed back. That's going to happen towards the end of November. But in the meantime, DeMarco, you are excited about watching Mike Tyson fight a shark. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it. I want to see Mike Tyson fight everything.
Oh, take it.
I do. Absolutely take that. I want to see Mike fight a shark. I want to see Mike fight Roy Jones. You know, anytime Mike Tyson laces up the gloves, I am there. Anytime Mike Tyson is in combat, I am there. I think I just saw him in some movie called IP Man 3, Ip Man 3. We're a simulated fight, and I was, like, riveted. So, yeah, absolutely I'm going to be there. Aren't you going to be there? It's Mike Tyson. He may eat
No, Mike is in that category. It's not unlike what we were talking about with Tiger and with LeBron a minute ago. If Mike Tyson's doing something, at least right now, I want to see it. Like, at the end, go back to shoot. This is 20 years ago at this point. When Mike was still fighting and holding on, and he was getting tagged by some really bad fighters. At that point, it's like, okay, this needs to go away. But I've forgotten about all that stuff, right? I've forgotten what that is. I just want to see Mike, because he looks good. I'm sure you've seen the videos. He looks sharp. He looks crisp. I know
he looks great.
Those gloves don't hit back. I understand that. I understand that no one's hitting him back. But he looks like he's as fit and clear-eyed as I've seen him in a really long time. I'm excited to see it.
I can care less what they say. They say it's only an exhibition bout and you're not supposed to go for the knockout. You're not going to control Mike Tyson once he gets in the ring, man. If you're Roy Jones, you better run. No doubt.
Yeah, no, look, if you're asking me to trust that Mike Tyson's going to follow the rules, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like maybe Mike Tyson is not the most adherent rule follower. One little quick one here on the way out the door, a Major League Baseball one. You get why everybody in baseball hates the Astros. Take it or shake it.
Oh, I'm going to take it. Absolutely. You know,
I'll take it.
We can go back, to Deflategate, to Spygate, to all this stuff, and what could be considered cheating. That was blatant and obvious cheating. You know, and none of these players have been punished for it. So it's obvious why everyone hates the Astros, no doubt. I'll take that.
The craziest part about it is that they seem to be the ones that are the most aggrieved, that they're the ones that are taking this position like they've somehow been done wrong, which makes everybody hate them all the more. I mean, yesterday, Laureano gets hit a couple of times by the A's, and the Astros pitching coach, or excuse me, their hitting coach, is chirping at them from the dugout. It's like, dude, what are you doing in there? Do you not get it? You just need to be quiet, and I'll put it through this way too. Springer, Altuve, both batting a .182. Alex Bregman's batting .218, and it's a little harder to get a hit in Major League Baseball when you don't know what's coming, and it is glorious watching those guys struggle. Absolutely.
Get
love
it on. Right. Bang a gong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. The college football season is hanging by a thread. Will we get any football on college campuses? That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN.